From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When the overwhelming majority of public policy leaders in a state belong to one religion, it's hard to measure the influence of that faith. Here in Utah, the LDS Church doesn't need to do much direct lobbying to make its positions known, but every once in a while, they will. The Equal Rights Amendment, gambling, gay marriage, of course, and now Utah's liquor laws. Last week, the church posted a video which made it clear they oppose any efforts to liberalize or change laws in this state governing alcohol. So today in the program, we're talking about this lobbying effort, which the observers we've spoken with say is significant. And here's the question: what does this all reveal about the influence of the LDS Church on Utah's political process? We invite you to join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is extremely careful about when it weighs in to an issue of public policy. The boundary they've often mentioned in the past is morality. When an issue is a matter they perceive as a moral one, having spiritual implications, they'll get involved. Issues that have qualified in the past have been parimutuel gambling. The church took a very active role in opposing a law that would have allowed gambling in this state. They were active, of course, with the Equal Rights Amendment, with gay marriage. And now it seems they want to limit the efforts to liberalize Utah's liquor laws. Lawmakers have been fine-tuning those laws for years now, but there isn't any major legislation being proposed this year, so it seemed significant and certainly interesting when the LDS Church released a video last week saying the liquor laws in Utah are fine where they are. D. Todd Christofferson of the Governing Quorum of the 12 Apostles was the leader featured in that video. He called the state's laws reasonable and balanced.
We've got a reasonable system, and it seems to be working. And I believe that the efforts to chip away at this that have gone on for years and years are counterproductive, really.
Today in the program, we're talking about this lobbying effort by the church, which raises broader questions about the influence of the church, or any church, really, that on matters that are moral but also political. You can join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Robert Gerke, reporter covering government for the Salt Lake Tribune. And Robert Gerke, welcome back. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We also have with us David Campbell. He's a professor of political science at Notre Dame University. He's joining us today by phone from his office in South Bend, Indiana. And Professor, welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
I wanted to start with Robert Gerke. Give us a sense, how significant is it, this statement?
Well, as you mentioned, it's sort of out of the ordinary, I think, coming as it did just a few days before the legislative session started. It had particular significance. As you mentioned, they don't weigh in on every issue, at least publicly, in this sort of fashion. And this was an issue that was being queued up, I think, for the legislative session, teed up with Representative Ryan Wilcox was sponsoring legislation to do away with the so-called Zion Curtain,
yeah,
which is this barrier that restaurants have to have where they if you're pouring or preparing a drink, you have to be behind that barrier. So there were proposals to do away with that, to do away with the intent to dine, which is when you go into a restaurant and you have to say, yes, I'm going to order food before you can, you have to order food before you can order a drink. So there were particular pieces of legislation that were on the agenda, I guess, for this session. And so for the church to weigh in as it did, and you've got to remember that an overwhelming majority of the legislators, over three quarters of the legislature, is are members of the church.
Right.
And so when you have something like this coming from a member of the Quorum of the 12, it's a pretty big deal.
I guess the question is, what is it that they're worried about in particular? As we said, there's not a lot of legislation going on up there right now. Is this all about that Zion Curtain then?
Well, I think for them to weigh in publicly like this is, the church has lobbyists on the Hill. They have a team of lobbyists. They're experienced, and they have, you know, they are well respected up there. And so the legislature knew where the church stood on this issue. You know, it's, they had conveyed that to the relevant legislators for, you know, over the past several years. Apparently, it wasn't, that wasn't adequate. You know, they were still in jeopardy of perhaps losing on this Iron Curtain
issue. So they thought they might lose.
They thought, what I've been told is that they thought they might lose on this issue. Yeah. And so the alternative they chose then is to go public and create some public pressure on the legislators to not go in this direction. So
now, look, maybe it's a cynical position to take, but a skeptical person anyway could say that what that means is they decided to go directly to voters as opposed to lawmakers. If they weren't going to win on the Hill, that they figured they could influence voters, the public.
Well, I mean, the legislators, they listen to their voters, especially in an election year as this is, and you know, and so if you draw a clear position and a clear distinction, then the legislators will have to account for that when it comes time for voters to go to the polls. I mean, there had been legislation in the last several years that did liberalize Utah's liquor laws and reform some of the quirks and take out some of the things that were seen as odd or whatnot. And so this is where I guess the church decided that they were going to draw the line and you know, dig in.
David Campbell, what do you make of this? Is it significant that they've done it at all, or they've certainly done it this way?
Oh, I think it is, although I don't think it's terribly surprising that the LDS Church would choose to weigh in on this particular issue or in this particular way. As I think the statement from the church acknowledges, the LDS Church has long had more than a passing interest in alcohol policy in Utah, going all the way back actually to the debate over prohibition in the 1920s and 30s, but flaring up again in the 1960s when liquor by the drink was the big issue. I would agree with your assessment that a video of this type and a statement on the church's website probably is designed not only for legislators in the Capitol, but for voters themselves. And, you know, this is, I think, a way for the church to make its position known again on this issue that on which it has kind of a long historical legacy.
Let me ask you, there's this question of whether this is a moral issue for the church or whether this is a public safety issue for the church. I guess they're probably seeing it as both in some ways. In the past, they've talked about how they only will get involved when they perceive it as a matter of morality. I want to play another clip from the statement issued by the church. This is, again, Elder D. Todd Christofferson, who says that to those who question whether the church is imposing its beliefs on others, he says they're not.
There's no point in that. That wouldn't benefit us in any way. That's not our interest. We do care about the culture and the environment that exists in this state and the people live in, because more than half the citizens of Utah are members of the LDS Church. But our concern is for the general public, for the general welfare, for the circumstances, the environment that people live in, raise their children in.
David Campbell, you've said that in some ways this is not then a kind of a scriptural argument, it's a sociological one. What did you mean?
Well, it's interesting. If you read the church's statement, this most recent one, on its position regarding alcohol policy in Utah, it very explicitly says that the church's position, at least in terms of the legislation that it supports, is not grounded in any sort of scripture. You know, they say, of course, we encourage our own members to live by the church's health code, the word of wisdom, as it's known. But the argument, if you will, made in the document is actually made on the grounds of public health and social science, you know, citing various statistics about the dangers of liberalizing alcohol regulation. And what's so interesting about that is there's actually a common link between the way the church describes its position on alcohol as how it describes its position on gambling, which is another issue that the church has long been involved with. Of course, not ever generated as much controversy as, say, its opposition to gay marriage. But when the church talks about gambling, and it has very publicly come out against various forms of gambling, whether it be lotteries or parimutuel wagering or that sort of thing. The church has always spoken in terms of a rather communitarian sense that, you know, we're worried about the welfare of the community. And you just heard Elder Christofferson say something similar there about the culture and the environment in Utah. So that's very interesting, right? That's very different than the church saying, we must do this because it's grounded in our scripture, or because this is what Revelation says, or because this is what we find, this is the word of God to the prophet.
Robert Kirke, what do you make of that? Again, this distinction that they're making, or that you've seen historically in the way they try to say this is not a political issue for us, it's a moral one, or it's about safety.
Right, right. Well, I think my sense is that if they did come out and say church doctrine is that, you know, that the state should not have, they'd be on a little bit of thin ice, because, you know, when you make an argument to the legislature, you have to come with, you know, good policy arguments, good data. It can't just be, you know, our faith believes this, and so you should believe it too, I think. And so, you know, I think it makes sense that they come with the data that they come with, and come with the social welfare argument that they're making. But at the same time, I think we've seen in the past, and I think we'll see again this year, that just because the statement came from the church doesn't mean this issue's dead. I think they're still going to, the legislators will still kind of weigh the case that they're making with the data they're making, and against sort of the cost benefit analysis of making the change, and it's still conceivable, I think, that this issue could have some life in it this session.
David Campbell, there's an important bit of historical context that may help us understand all of this. You mentioned the 1930s, where church leaders were very vocal about wanting to keep prohibition in place, but it turns out it didn't work. I mean, the Mormon vote was pretty influential in actually repealing prohibition. So what Robert Gerke is saying is it doesn't necessarily kill it. Means what? That a statement doesn't necessarily mean this issue is over.
That's definitely true, although there's a very important difference between the historical context of that particular debate over the repeal of prohibition in the 1930s and the contemporary environment in which we find the church operating. Back in the 1930s, and many of your listeners who are themselves LDS or just live in an area where there are lots of Latter-day Saints may find this quite surprising, but there was once a time when it was common for LDS general authorities to publicly disagree with one another, not so much on the fundamentals of the doctrines of the faith, but certainly on issues like alcohol policy, sort of public policy issues that the church might have a position on. So in 1933, Church President Heber J. Grant was definitely in favor of maintaining prohibition and made that position very clear. But there were other general authorities who had been quite vocal, arguing that prohibition should be repealed. So if you were a church member in 1933, you could find statements from general authorities on both sides of that issue. And in some statistical analysis that I've done with my colleague Quinn Monson at Brigham Young University, we found that in 1933, only about 55% of church members voted with the church's position, or with Heber J. Grant's position at least, which was to maintain prohibition. Contrast that to today, where you do not find any public disagreement among the general authorities on really any issue, but certainly not on an issue like this. And so if you're a church member and you're looking to the church for guidance on the question, you're not going to hear those conflicting messages. And sure enough, we find that in the contemporary period, when the church takes a position on an issue where there's no disagreement among church leaders, Mormons really do adhere to the position of the church. We've seen that quite publicly with same-sex marriage, but that was also true for liquor by the drink in the 60s. It was true on gambling in a variety of initiative campaigns in Utah and other states. So that's a very important sort of factor to keep in mind, that you're not going to hear the loyal opposition, if there is such a thing, within the ranks of the general authorities on an issue like alcohol policy or probably anything.
And I think what he says is true. I think you kind of have to draw a distinction between the legislature and the public. Whereas the public might, fall in line with this argument, I guess. The legislature, as I mentioned at the outset, the church had already made its position known to the legislature on this issue. And the House, despite that position last year, passed this legislation. The Senate didn't, and so the, you know, then they were at a disagreement, and the legislation didn't pass. Again, it's going to be on the table this year. Whether or not this makes it harder for the House or for the Senate to swallow this, I think is the question that's open.
But do you sense, Robert Gerke, that this is changing in any way? That would lawmakers in another generation, maybe not so long ago, would they have been more inclined to see what David Campbell is talking about, a consensus position being expressed by leaders of the Mormon Church very publicly? In the past, would they have gone along with it more than they might be inclined to do today, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I haven't seen this firsthand, but I've heard legend of days where bills would be coming up, the bills would be sort of gliding through the session, just breezing through, and then a call would come from the church office building to a couple legislators, legislative leadership, and then that would be the last you'd ever hear of the bill. I've heard legend of that. I've not seen that firsthand. I think in recent years, you can point to the immigration issue where they were, where there was a disagreement, I think, between the church's stated position on immigration and some of the rank and file members, especially the conservative Republican members of the legislature. And so I don't think it's reasonable to say that there's going to be a lockstep, fall in line. And again, this issue with the liquor last year, their position was pretty clearly stated and not necessarily adhered to. I think when there's a tension between sort of the Republican political beliefs, the Republican political philosophy, and sort of the pro-business, small government philosophy, and then this, and then the religious philosophy, I think there's a tension that is created there, and different members will weigh those two different competing principles on in different ways.
David Campbell, do you have any sense of whether or not, if you're a lawmaker in a Utah lawmaker in the 21st century, you're an active Mormon, you're being lobbied either directly or indirectly, which often happens on Utah's Capitol Hill, by the LDS Church. Do you have a sense that the stakes are different now than they might have been? Would there have been a chance where it may have jeopardized your standing in the church at another time, whereas today that would be a much more complicated and difficult thing to do?
Well, I think it depends on the way the church communicates its message. One of the other things that I have found in my research with my co-authors is we've examined how church members, and as Robert Gerke noted, all I can talk about is how voters in general or the general public reacts to things, not necessarily how politicians do, and
of course
they have a different set of incentives, so they might be behaving differently. But just sort of Mormons in general, they're more likely, as you might expect, to respond to the church's position by moving in line with the church's position when that position is clearly articulated by the top church leadership, as compared to, say, a statement from the public affairs office. And we can find examples of both of these, and we've conducted these studies where we tell a representative sample of Mormons, this is what the public affairs office of the church has said about, say, immigration or about the anti-discrimination statute in Salt Lake City toward homosexuals. In both cases, the church took a fairly, if you will, moderate position, or certainly not the position in line with conservative orthodoxy, politically conservative orthodoxy. And we find that when told that it's the public affairs office, Mormons are a little ambivalent about moving in their attitudes. But when you tell them that this has come from the First Presidency, has come from the Quorum of the Twelve, well, then they're much more likely to respond. What's interesting about this particular case on alcohol policy is that we didn't just get the statement on the church's website. You also got this video with a member of the Quorum of the Twelve. So that sort of ups the ante for Mormons in general and presumably for LDS lawmakers. Now, that doesn't, as I would agree with Robert Gerke, that doesn't mean that all LDS lawmakers are necessarily going to fall in line. We certainly have lots of examples, including Harry Reid in Washington, of prominent LDS politicians who do not always have views and positions that are in line with the church, and the church, to my knowledge, has never actually taken any kind of disciplinary action against those elected officials, and frankly, I can't imagine that they would.
It's David Campbell. He's a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame, joined us today by phone from his office there in South Bend, Indiana. Professor, we got you in here a little earlier than we expected. We're glad you could roll with the punches. Thanks very much.
We're all about rolling with the punches at Notre Dame.
Yeah, good. Thanks very much. Robert Gerke, of course, reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. Robert, stay with us, if you will. We'll get back to you when we get back from a break. We're going to hear from Representative Ray Wilcox from the legislature. He's the lawmaker who's dealing with this legislation of the so-called Zion Curtain, and we're going to get his reaction when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about why the LDS Church is concerned about efforts to change the state's liquor laws, because it's pretty rare when the church makes a public statement on a matter that's before lawmakers. But last week, church officials posted a video of a high-ranking official saying they oppose efforts to reform laws governing alcohol in Utah. So we're talking about this effort by the church and what it may mean and how what it says about the influence of the LDS Church on politics here in Utah. Joining us now on the program is Representative Ryan Wilcox, who represents Utah's 7th District in the State House of Representatives. Wilcox is sponsoring a bill this session to bring down Utah's so-called Zion Curtain barriers. He pushed similar legislation last session. And Representative, thanks for being with us.
Sure. Good to be here.
I wanted to ask you first, let's start with your reaction to the statement, which amounted to what I understand to be two words, holy cow. You were surprised.
Yes, I understand Robert's on the phone, so I really appreciate that. I thanked him for including those words in the statement in the newspaper, but I think that does demonstrate a little bit the shock and sort of surprise at that level. I've heard some compare it to killing a mosquito with an atomic bomb, but certainly a departure from what we've seen in the past from the church.
Disappointed, were you in the statement?
Yeah, personally, I think professionally, a little bit. It's certainly not a different message. The message has been the same as you know what we've been used to hearing from the church. The church has long been reticent to looking at different approaches or different ways to attack these issues. Certainly, when you include an apostle in that sort of a format and that kind of a presentation, that changes the dynamic and really. Whether or not we recognize that, I heard somebody talking, I think it was David
Campbell,
that,
right?
Yeah, the professor from Notre Dame, talking about it. Certainly it changes that for Mormon legislators and Mormon public from a level of public policy and ups that into the realm of doctrine. Regardless of what is specifically said in the message, that is the implication.
What's the difference? I mean, you've talked about this before, that members of the church see people like D. Todd Christofferson as a prophet, a seer, a revelator. So how does that influence how they see this involvement by the church? And what's the important distinction there?
Yeah, and that how does it influence? Immediately, the messages that start showing up are questions about your standing in the faith.
Mm-hmm. And we should clarify, Representative, you are an active right. member of the LDS faith. I didn't make that clear at the beginning.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. I'm card-carrying, proud to support. I'm a former missionary, served on leadership positions in the church currently as well in the past. So I'm, as far from a faith perspective, this is my faith.
Yeah.
And these are the brethren, these are the leaders of my faith that I sustain, and I do that today. As my ecclesiastical leaders. And to have this sort of a discussion in the past where many times, and there are several of us, obviously, that happen to be LDS that get involved in controversial issues or alcohol policy, many times we feel like the ways that we've done things in the past need to be looked at again. And frankly, we feel like that's our job as legislators to reevaluate constantly what we've done from a policy perspective and to bring that back to how we can improve the policy, and whether that is decreasing teen drinking, DUI rates or any of those things. Those are the same goals. And oftentimes people get connected. Everyone does. We get married to things that we had a hand in, or to use a slight metaphor, we get used to what has been in the past. And so it's often, you know, when someone challenges that or says, okay, let's take a look at it, it can be a difficult thing. So it's not surprising that the church has been reticent to look at alcohol reforms. They've been that way for forever. Really, the only difference is now we've elevated this from a public policy discussion into the ecclesiastical realm, simply with the use of Elder Christofferson.
Mm-hmm.
And to pretend like that hasn't happened because we state that this isn't doctrine while we're doing this is a little bit disconcerting.
Have you talked to the church officials about your problems with the way this statement was issued? Have you gone to them directly?
Sure. Yeah, you talk to the lobbyists. We've had ongoing discussions for years about ways to improve how we handle alcohol distribution and the alcohol laws in the state. And frankly, in the past, and this is one of the larger disappointments for us, in the past we've been able to come to solutions that have both improved operations at the DABC. We've had all sorts of fraud problems. We're able to work through those and really come up with some things that I'm confident have dramatically increased protections for both the public as the ownership interest and the operation itself, so that it functions like it's intended to function. And the church has been a large part of that. So it's important to have interested parties there at the table, regardless of who they happen to represent. Matt and all the other groups interested in that.
But let me ask you, the question sort of came up a little bit earlier on the program from Robert Grucke, mm-hmm. that there was some sense that the church could see that they possibly were going to lose on this issue.
Right.
If not in the Senate, because I'm sure that's still up in the air, the Senate hasn't gone along with your bill, as you know, but in the House, that the church was going to lose in the House, therefore, as opposed to approaching you directly, they went sort of around you and issued a video statement to the public, read your constituents. Do you see it like that?
I don't know how you can look at it a different way. I think let their statement stand for what it is. In many ways, I'm grateful. I know one of the frustrations that they expressed to me personally was that they're constantly criticized for getting involved in public policy behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the press, and instead of coming out in public. And so they see, I don't want to speak for them, I'll just share my conversation a little bit, but they see what they've done as sharing that publicly. And so in many ways, I think it's a positive step. I think that the higher transparency is a good thing. Frankly, I'm grateful for it, because at the end of the day, policymakers, you know, LDS or otherwise, we want to come to the best possible solution that we can get an agreement on, and that, you know, that actually accomplishes those goals. And many of the things that they pointed out in that are the same things that they've shared with us, and we do have the lowest DUI rate in the nation, and that is wonderful. We're grateful for that. It's just, how did we get there? How do we actually impact that? And, you know, of course, we've left out the most glaring part of that, and that is we have the lowest DUI rate in the nation because of them. So in many ways, their own statement discounts their own efficacy. I don't drink personally because I've looked at my, you know, stake president in the eye, my bishop in the eye, and committed not to drink. And that's directly from, you know, my church. And we have a lot of Mormons and in Utah, and we make those kind of commitments. So it's interesting that they would attribute that to the ever-changing laws that we've had in the state, particularly to double down on this Zion Curtain thing, that this separate storage and preparation areas. That one is interesting because that has, you know, existed since 2009, and really, you know, we have half of this, you know, a little bit more than half that it still doesn't apply to. So to attribute any of that stuff, the DUI rates or teen drinking or any of that, to that particular issue, which is, you know, all this bill did, is interesting because the majority of restaurants don't have to comply still.
Yeah, yeah.
With that. So
let me ask you. What kind of position does this put you in as an active Mormon? Do you honestly in any way figure it may jeopardize, if not your standing in the church, which I doubt, but
right.
what about your future future status as a potential leader within Mormonism. If you've gone forward and said, I'm not in agreement with this consensus position of church leadership, does that affect your role in the church in the future?
You know, I think that I'm not in this because of leadership positions or any of that. At the end of the day, each of us have had to look at ourselves in the eye and, you know, in the mirror and say, okay, what are the commitments that I've made? I've made, in this role as a legislator, a commitment to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that's, you know, and to execute the duties of my office with fidelity. And that's the commitment that I've made in this role. And the commitment as an active member of the church is to sustain and support my leaders in the church. So you have to decide which of those. They're not necessarily in conflict, and immediately the church will back up and say, oh, we're not asking you to choose between the two. And they make that distinction when you talk to them by saying, oh, this is public policy, and then there's doctrine. And, you know, that applies to, you know, following us in an ecclesiastical manner. And then the problem, of course, comes when we mix the two, and that's the difference for many of us, is that now we've elevated that. If it's not, we're saying that it's not doctrine, but now we've used an apostle. And that is where most of the discomfort comes in. When the church, for example, issued the statement on the non-discrimination ordinance in Salt Lake City, there's a reason why they didn't send President Packer. We used I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but nice guy, PR guy that went down.
A
spokesman came down, and frankly, I think if they had said the exact same thing last Tuesday with the whiteboard and the whole thing and made the arguments, and this is why we think that this should stay the same, or that we should, you know, put a halt on any kind of reform, that would have been a whole different ballgame. I think for us as legislators as well as the public, the difference now is that we've mixed those two a little bit. So when we come back to those two original commitments, both to protect the Constitution, support the Constitution, and to support your leaders, in their mind, there doesn't seem to be a conflict, or we're ignoring that. In our minds, this is a distinction without a difference a little bit, and so it puts us in a very awkward situation. But at the same time, I can't look. The original reason I got into this in the first place, I was walking into Rovalli's on 25th Street in Ogden, and the owner recognizing me, finding out who I am, and me asking the silly question, totally ignorant of what that funny looking thing, 7'2" structure was in a corner of his restaurant that looks so out of place, asking that question, and yet three doors down at La Ferrovia, it doesn't exist. And so we're under the law. If we consider this to treat them equally under the law, it's a serious problem. So we're in a position where I honestly do not feel that I can uphold that particular law and honor my constitutional oath to treat people equally under the law. And so this is one of those where I'm taking them at their word that this is different, that this is not doctrine, and that I'm in no risk of anything with that. But for the public and for many of us, including myself, the way they've ruled this out, this is certainly problematic.
That's Representative Ryan Wilcox, serves Utah's 7th District in the State House of Representatives, joined us by phone from the Capitol in Salt Lake. Representative, we're grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Robert Gerke, just one minute left before we go to a break, and then we're going to hear from representatives of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. What effect will this have? You mentioned you don't think it's put a dagger in efforts to change some of these laws, but is this going to move things, you think?
Yeah, not a dagger. I think, as Ryan mentioned, it has sort of, you know, it was a wake-up call. I think, you know, the Speaker of the House the other day said she still hasn't seen any data that the Zion Curtain actually is effective. And she said that she's comfortable having her own opinions. You know, she doesn't take her marching orders from the church. So she's probably not alone in that sentiment. I think, as you know, you noted, the Senate was still leaning against this. And so I think this year this bill probably won't go anywhere, but it probably doesn't make it go away forever. And the Restaurant Association, the League of Cities and Towns, several of these restaurants are still going to be pushing this year and in years to come to get rid of this, despite the church's edict.
Robert Gerke, reporter covering government for the Salt Lake Tribune. Robert, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We need to take another break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're exploring the LDS Church's position on efforts to liberalize or change the state's liquor laws. It's pretty rare when the church makes a public statement on a matter that is before state lawmakers. Last week, the church posted a video of a church leader, high-ranking church leader, we should point out for those uninitiated, D. Todd Christofferson is in the governing quorum of the 12 apostles, who mentioned, in effect, that the church was opposing any efforts to reform the laws governing alcohol. Joining us now on the program is Mike Otterson, the Managing Director of Public Affairs for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Michael Purdy, also with us, the Director of Public Affairs for the LDS Church. And welcome to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to get your sense, first of all, how did this, to the degree that you can explain how this happened, has this been something that's been, that church leaders have been thinking about for some time, that they're concerned about? Did one leader in particular or a number of leaders in particular raise this as a matter? Before we get to what the statement that was made, what do you understand about that part of it?
Well, I think it's important, Doug, to recognize at the outset that it's interesting that the last 40 minutes, all of the discussion has been about process.
Yeah.
It's been about who made the statement and why that might be and what the motives are and so on. None of the discussion has been about the actual issue. I think the Associated Press referred to our statement by Elder Christofferson and the data that was put up as a hefty statement, and it is indeed. There's a ton of very powerful data, social data that is drawn from places like the Center for Disease Control and so on.
But that's true about seatbelt laws. That's true about helmet laws. You don't weigh in on those things.
No, that's true. But the conversation that we're trying to drive here is about why these laws, whatever they may be,
right,
exist in the first place.
Sure.
This is really a public education initiative. We felt that every single year, year after year, we see the legislature address the issue of alcohol, and they address it because the alcohol lobby, the entertainment industry, constantly pushes because they want to see that there's a profit motive, clearly. They want to see more alcohol sales. And all we're saying is there's a social consequence to that. Legislators and the public, if they're going to make those kind of decisions, need to make them on an informed basis. They need to understand what the consequences are, and then they'll make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But what's been missing from this conversation for years is what those social consequences are.
How do you measure the social consequences to what you've heard in the past 40 minutes also was that this is not about alcohol laws generally, but this seems to have been, and I'll give you a chance to respond to this, targeted at one particular law, which is Representative Wilcox's so-called Zion Curtain Law, to get rid of that. How do you respond to that, that this is in fact related to one particular piece of legislation, Representative Wilcox's?
Yeah, I don't think there's any merit to that. You know, everybody that's talked about this, even Representative Wilcox earlier on the program, mentioned that there was nothing new in the message that they haven't been hearing from the church for years.
Right.
I think what was new to him was the fact that it came from a church leader rather than a church spokesman. And yet, Elder Christofferson addresses that in the message, saying when our church spokespeople or our lobbyists speak on these issues, they are speaking for us. So I don't think anybody should be surprised whether it comes from an Elder Christofferson or whether it would come from a staff member who's representing those church leaders in these type of discussions. The message is the same. Representative Wilcox said that. I think everybody else would say that as well. So the fact of who it came from, having it suddenly be of interest, I think is fascinating to us. The message has been consistent. Nobody should be surprised that we have an interest in alcohol. And if you want to know what we're saying on the topic, you know, you can now go to the website and listen to that.
I guess the timing is something. And again, Michael Otters, I'm going back to process. Forgive me, but the question, you know, did come up. The question was raised as to whether or not church leaders perceived that they were losing on this issue, not liquor laws in general, although we could maybe talk about that. But this particular bill, let's throw some muscle in there. Let's put out a video that has not just a spokesperson, but it has a member of the Quorum of the Twelve to make a statement that is fairly definitive, that represents a consensus of the LDS Church, and that will at least clarify our position. How do you respond to that?
I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
Is it fair enough to say that you sensed that you were losing and therefore decided to go ahead?
No, I think it's not. I think we're too focused on one bill. I think every year, as I said before,
was not focused on that one bill.
No. There is every year this dance that goes on between the entertainment industry and the alcohol lobbyists and the legislator and those who, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, who push back. Every year it happens. Yeah. And so we saw that was going to happen again. We felt that the piece that had been missing from this was a real understanding of what the social consequences are. And by the way, this is a discussion that's going on across the nation. This is not just happening in Utah. I was struck just this week with two things. One is that tragic picture of the little boy, 3-year-old Zane Thurber from Taylorsville. The picture of him on the front page of the Deseret News this week, the smiling little boy playing on a slide. That child is now dead. Those parents now have to deal with that for the rest of their life. It was a drunk driver situation. Just a few days ago, Katie Couric and her program had a whole program devoted to alcohol and the challenges with alcohol with youth. We saw Brian Williams on Nightly News just another couple of weeks ago, again talking about alcohol and its addictive nature and how dangerous it is. This is a conversation that they're having across the country, and I was struck yesterday by a headline in the Deseret News which basically said that Utah was the envy of these other states that are trying to deal with this issue. So we need to take a much broader view than whether the Zion Curtain works or whether there's data to show it works or not. The burden of proof is on the other side to show that these things are not working. The burden of proof is not on those who believe that there are serious social consequences that have not been addressed.
Let me play another clip from Elder Christofferson. In it, he talks about what he sees as the benefits of Utah's liquor laws, and he mentioned something that I wanted to ask you about. He calls it an alcohol culture. Here's another clip from Elder Christofferson.
It's very important that we avoid an alcohol culture, as we have successfully done to this point. That's yielded many benefits. In Utah, we have the lowest number of traffic fatalities related to drunk driving in the country. We have the lowest prevalence of binge drinking for those 18 and older in the country. And we always rank among the lowest in terms of DUI arrests. Why would we want to risk losing any of those benefits that have come with the regimen we now have in place for alcohol consumption and regulation?
What does he mean, alcohol culture? What does he mean by that? Is that an expression of a concern?
You know, I've not addressed that particular term with Elder Christofferson, but I have spent most of my life living outside of Utah. I spent many, many years in Sydney, Australia, and you walk down the street any time in the evening in Sydney, and you walk past a bar or a pub every block, and people are spilling out all over the sidewalk into the road, glasses in their hands and so on. You can't move without advertising. Advertising alcohol is absolutely everywhere. That, to me, is an alcohol culture. What Elder Christofferson particularly had in mind, I don't know, but he's also lived outside the United States, outside of Utah, that's what he meant.
I think later in the interview, Doug, he also talks about how can we expect to, you know, when people talk about normalizing alcohol laws, how can we expect to go the direction that other municipalities, other states, other communities have gone and not think you're going to get some of those same results? As Mike referred to, other states are trying to figure out how can they curb some of this? How can they minimize some of the negative consequences? And we're saying, yeah, Utah's reached a really good balance of providing alcohol reasonably, but avoiding or at least minimizing those negative consequences.
Let me put it this way. Why fall on your swords for the Zion Curtain. Why is that so important, this the particular thing? As you heard from Representative Ryan Wilcox, he and his colleagues are deeply concerned about the same things that Elder Christofferson and the rest of you are concerned about in terms of safety issues, those kinds of things. But this is just not an equal treatment, not a fair treatment for businesses. It doesn't seem to have any real effect that you can measure. It's unnecessary. Why is the Zion Curtain something that seems so important?
I think there's a lot
you?
Of assumptions there that I don't think anybody can back up.
Okay.
It's true that you can say, well, where's a study specific to the so-called Zion Curtain? There isn't one, but neither does anybody who opposes that have any data that says.
But let me be clear. You're saying that the Zion Curtain, there is some sense of belief within the leadership of the church that the Zion Curtain does work.
We're saying that Utah has reached a package of laws that have provided.
But I'm talking
alcohol.
About one element of that package.
But you're making a mistake there, because we're not trying to. This wasn't focused just on the Zion Curtain.
Okay.
This was on alcohol policy in the state. And what we're saying is there is studies, for instance, that talk about children's exposure to alcohol and whether or not alcohol is seen as commonplace and socially acceptable on underage drinking rates and on alcoholism rates and on basically increased consumption generally.
Right.
There are studies about that. And we also have studies that show that Utah is doing extremely well. And so the point that Elder Christofferson was making was, you look at those two things and you say, why don't we just alter a few things and see what happens? That doesn't seem reasonable to us.
This question about whether it's a moral issue or a sociological issue, it can be both, right, from your perspective?
Right. No, it certainly can be. I mean, to refer back to the little three-year-old, is that a moral question when a three-year-old dies because of somebody drinking too much? Of course it is. But you'll notice that the arguments that we advanced are from sociological data. It's from social science. It's not from the doctrinal point of view. We're really puzzled, frankly, by Representative Wilcox's comments about doctrine. We were very careful. You'll see that in Elder Christofferson's statement and all of the material that's on our website, there's no reference to the church pushing doctrine at people, other than the disclaimer that Elder Christofferson
made. But that's
made,
what he
that
said.
That you played. It's not a doctrinal issue here. This is maybe a moral issue, but we're not trying to dictate doctrine to
But what he's saying is that it's a de facto doctrinal issue when you involve a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles.
Only if you think that the Public Affairs Department and our lobbyists work in complete independence from the church leadership. Of course they don't. No lobbyist, no lawyer, or no representative of the church in the church's employment system would ever purport to represent their own views without making very sure that they were representing the church leadership. And of course, our lobbyists are most careful to do that. So it just simply doesn't follow.
Yeah, it seems very interesting that someone can say, well, if it would have been somebody else, we could have, you know, perhaps discounted it. But now that it's an apostle, we can't. And as I said, Elder Christofferson addressed that very specifically. You know, when we, no matter how we speak, whatever channel this is, when we speak on an issue, it is the church's view.
Does it reflect in any way this video statement? Because this has come up before. It didn't come up earlier in the program, but I did want to give you a chance to. I mean, that it was in some way strategic, that it was a way, for example, of distracting people from the church's views that have been controversial related to gay marriage. I just wanted to give you a chance that this is a distraction. You guys are trying to change the subject.
Really? Is that a serious question?
It is a serious question. I've heard it. It has come up that things didn't go so well for you on the Prop 8 move, and this is an effort to change the discussion. It's come up. I wanted to give you a chance.
Well, it's completely, obviously completely separate issues, and the church remains irrevocably, implacably opposed to changing the definition of traditional marriage, and we've been consistent on that as long as I remember. And, of course, that's now a front burner issue for the state of Utah. So we have a huge interest in that. And you've seen our public statements made on that issue. So, no, this isn't a distraction. It's a completely separate issue.
Are we going to be seeing more of these kinds of things, do you think? Or is this just one of those things that you felt so strongly about? It's, as I said before, these are very rare, these kinds of times when you get involved in issues like this.
Well,
are we going to see more
I think generally the church's approach to these kind of things is, our default position, if you like, is to be to use as light a touch as possible, to not get involved as often as we can. However, there's something that's changed in the last few years, and that is the arrival of the information age. People today, if they have any kind of question, they're going to go and Google it, whether it's on their cell phone or on their iPad or whatever. And so today we're in a situation where we really have to have information out there that's accessible on mobile devices, accessible on computers. And so you'll see more and more of this kind of thing where we're putting information, our position, our beliefs, our policies online so people can find them. That's really important.
Have you, I wonder if you've assessed the public relations effect on all of this, you know, the cost and the benefits of this. I mean, and if you worry at all that it could make people angry in the sense that that the church is trying to kind of restrict their freedoms, make a judgment call about their lifestyle behavior, you know, impose a sense of morality. I played that clip from Elder Christofferson who said that's right. Not what we're trying to right. do. But have you measured the cost and benefits of coming being so public on this issue?
Well, the public relations fallout is always going to be the very last thing we think about. What's important here is the issue. And sometimes you're going to alienate some people. You know, I was reading the comment some of the comments in the Salt Lake Tribune, and frankly, those people are always going to be opposed to us, and they're always going to be upset when we weigh in. The irony is that we'll get some people saying, "Well, the church should just keep out of any kind of social issue. It is a fundamental religious freedom in a democracy for a church to be able to speak out in the public square. So we're going to do that when church leaders feel it's necessary." But on the other hand, you've also got people saying, "Why doesn't the church weigh into things like clean air? And why don't we hear yeah. more from the church on other issues?" So we really can't win. You know, why are they doing too much or too little? But I think we try to strike a good balance.
I think there's great confidence, too, when people, if they'd go to the website and actually look at the material, it changes the discussion. It's not about process. It's about what are the arguments that are being made and how are they trying to, you know, speak to the issue itself and round out that conversation.
Right.
That's Michael Purdy, Director of Public Affairs for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mike Otterson, Managing Director of Public Affairs for the Church. Gentlemen, it's been great having you. Thank you very much. Grateful
you.
That you would do this for us.
Thank you.
I should mention that we have a new video that we're posting on our Radio West website. You should go and check that out. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.